we're going to take a look at another scenario. So why don't I turn it over to you?
Yeah, let's do it. So last combat video was Carissa's two-shot kill of the boar. We had put that in this social context, right? And so that brought some acclaim to him, to his lord. And this, we're still sort of, you know, in terms of the campaign that we're sort of describing, these are events that have taken place before the first real scenario that we're going to play with some other folks on the Silver Way. Carius was given the opportunity by the manor of his lord to be a caravan guard on some trade ventures that he had invested in. His home village, which I guess we should point out, is in northeast Kaldor. Mm-hmm. And it's that not far from some somewhat typical routes of trade, and certainly coming out of the mountains to the north and to the east, you know, trappers bring their pelts, you know, but also a larger trade takes place nearby, not in this village. What was it? Tarodir? Was that it? Yeah.
Yep.
Tarodir.
Tarodir Manor.
Right. Yeah. And that's a half day's walk from a keep town where you were sent. And so we're sort of jumping ahead, where you have, in fact, taken part in a month's long journey to the southern coast of Harn, to the southeastern coast, into the kingdom of Meldarine, and in fact, to the large port city of Sheriffir. And that's where this scenario, the second scenario, is taking place. You know, so we're months ahead. So maybe, you know, perhaps the boar scenario took place in month 11, right? And so this was, so maybe in the first month of 720, as spring broke, you were part of a caravan that went to the port city. Yeah, and those dates might be a little, maybe it's more like it was a winter caravan in month 12 that brought you south. So we're going to jump ahead also, and you know, it's late at night. You have a contact from one of the other caravan guards that there's a local scholar named Elbin who often looks for two or three special guards for particular. You know, not so much trade caravans, but he looks for protection in various ventures he's involved in. And so you have a meeting with him the next day. But in the evening before, you classically wander in to the wrong side of town. Now, by the way, you're perhaps staying at a nearby inn. In this scenario, you don't have your longbow with you, which is not unreasonable, right? But the hunting knife and the short sword and the quilt coat you're in is perfectly acceptable. So late one evening, you've on your way back to your inn, you pass an alleyway, and you hear some muffled some muffled cries. And so that to have heard that doesn't require an awareness test, but maybe to pick up some more information on it, I'm going to have you make an awareness test.
Sure. So
okay.
My awareness is a 60.
Right. And this is a test of your hearing. So depending on, you know, we do have the version of the character sheet where you would have a sound awareness, but in this version, it's all unified.
Yep. And I rolled a 16.
A 16. Okay. So you definitely feel like it's the sound of a child, not so much weeping, but sort of gasping, and in fright. And you look down, you know, there is some, you know, It's a full moon sort of situation. So there is some light and maybe some shadowy light from, you know, a tavern not far away. So you can somewhat see down this alleyway. It's, you know, only about 10 feet wide. And it seems to have come from the shadows at the end of it.
Hmm. Well, I will, I'll investigate and
okay.
I'll just have a hand on hilt as I,
oh yeah, sure. Okay. Yeah. You, it's the, you can see when just by walking 5 or 10 feet down the shadowy alley that it's only about 40 feet deep. And suddenly, from sort of behind a barrel, sort of what looks like a heap of clothing suddenly jumps up and stands and to their full height of 3 feet and scatters off in further deeper into the to the alleyway, and in fact hurtles through a window. And you know, this looked to be the size of maybe a child who just sort of suddenly stood up and ran off. And at that moment, from behind you, you hear someone clearly say, okay, hand over your belt pouch.
Oh, hell no.
Yeah.
As I turn around, I'm drawing the short sword.
Okay. So, you turn around and you see, so you're about 10 or 15 feet into the alley, almost halfway down it, and you turn around. You see two figures standing at the mouth of the alley where you just came from. The first one, they're both, one is maybe about 5.5 feet tall. They're both wearing layers of clothing. You don't see any, you don't see any glint of mail or armor. The first one, she's holding a buckler in her left hand, outstretched, and she in her right hand is a truncheon. And standing beside and sort of behind her is a slightly taller man, similarly outfitted, and he, you know, he's slapping in his hand what would in our day be a baseball bat, but it's a very well crafted club. And he's standing behind her. She was the one that said that to you. And she, when you turn and look at her, and she sees that you've drawn your sword, her eyebrows raise, as you know, to imply, really, you're going to do this?
Mm-hmm.
And so she kind of glances to her friend, and they approach you.
Yeah, I would sternly advise you to pick a better mark.
Yeah, they, and the fellow standing behind her sort of blurts out in kind of an off-kilter laughter and grinning, and he just nods and he steps up to strike you.
Okay.
So this is an example of the kind of the first step of combat, which, you know, I've classically railroaded you into for sure, demonstration purposes. But notice that there was no real sense of surprise. There could have been, but because of the way I've role played these two glib thugs, you know, they had no worries that you. In fact, they wanted to hear you. They were hoping you would hand over your whatever you have in your purse immediately. And you, there was a chance you could have been surprised, maybe if you'd critically failed that initial roll. But what I'm pointing out to Game Masters is both of you are aware of each other. And, you know, this is a particular sub-step where if one party is unaware, you can, and we can maybe demonstrate various ways to determine surprise. Sometimes it's opposed. Sometimes it's just a straight test of one party. In this instance, everyone's aware of each other. And so, yeah, I'm afraid for Carys that we're entering in some combat. These two folks are quite serious about getting a hold of your weapons even. They're probably at least as valuable as whatever paltry few coins you might have on you. So, okay. So and again, no, go ahead.
No. I mean, I think everyone is clearly alert, so we don't have to really worry about that surprise role.
Right.
And so,
and that, of course, was just hugely important for you in the Boris scenario, right?
Mm-hmm.
But so at this point, you just everyone gets an action in terms of decreasing initiative. It's called your initiative rank, or IR.
Okay. And my rank is 65.
65. So yeah, you'll get the jump on these two. And to let people know, I'm running these two NPCs as what's as what are called action NPCs. And there's a section of the campaign chapter, a page that tells you how to run characters. And this is, you know, fairly common in all RPGs. And you can come up with varying stat blocks if you want to create brigands. There's some given in the bestiary chapter. But I'm going to run these two truly on the spur of the moment. And I've got an action ML in mind. 40 to 60 is kind of a sweet spot of typical MLs. And so I have one in mind. I'll show you what those are. And they're outfitted in the heavy clothing suit. You know, one has a one-handed club and a buckler. The other has a two-handed larger club. These are all in the possession chapter. So we'll just launch in. So, yeah, you carries. There is a sidebar suggestion if you want to roll initiative. But otherwise, you just immediately start in initiative rank.
Okay. I think despite the two-handed club being probably the more damaging weapon, I'm going to go for the person that's probably more readily able to defend themselves and try to take them out first.
Okay. All right.
And go for the woman with the buckler.
So it sounds like you want to attack, and just to let people know on the action choices on 161, when it's your turn, you can take a free action at the start of it, and then with a one-turn action, you can choose one of these options. You've described to me the attack option.
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't need to charge, because the way I described it, a charge is a half move plus an attack. You technically didn't need to do that. So, yeah, we would go straight to the melee sequence. You're aware you've got a ready weapon. And so you would make a, at this point, you would, you've declared your target. You've got your short sword out, I believe. Now,
yep.
Something that we sort of glossed over with the boar is you can't, by default, your aiming will be determined by a roll of the dice starting with the one, right, in the zone. One, for you, a short sword is a D6, so it'd be a 1 through 6. Now, you can alter that. You can aim low, right, and that requires you to absorb a minus 10 penalty, but then you can sort of you can announce what zone number you want the roll to start. So if you wanted to aim low, you could announce that the zone number 5 would be the start of your D6 roll, so that a 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. But that requires a minus 10 penalty because you're stooping, this sort of thing. But the default is just a 1 through 6 for upright humans, right? That's the default. So you would also announce if you have any zone aiming preferences.
So they're just wearing clothing. I'm going to actually just probably go for the torso. I'm going to try a thrust attack.
Okay.
And just try to skewer her.
Yeah.
Right? Like
sure. Right. So it sounds like, you know, you want to aim for zone number 4. Is that, you know?
I think so.
4, 5, 6.
I think
six,
that makes
yeah.
the most sense.
Okay. Yeah.
And yeah, I've got a bonus on thrust attacks for reach.
That's right. So, you have a 4 reach. She, you compare the reach of your opponent. And a one-handed club has a 4 reach also.
Okay.
So she's able to keep you at bay a little bit better than the boar. would have, right, with just a tusk attack, it would have been shorter. So in this sense, there is no modifier to your attack. I've also chosen a defense. I'm going to try to block with my buckler. And so then it's so reach is a wash. And you're going to make a test against your 57, and I'm going to make a test just to let people know she has a 50 action ML.
Do we need to modify anything because I'm engaged with two people?
On defense, you do.
Defense. Okay.
Being outnumbered is a penalty to defense, but it doesn't affect your attack.
Okay.
But that's a great question.
All right. Let's see if my dice are in my favor. That is a definitely a no.
Okay. 83. You know, it's interesting. I have a 55. I have a special plus 10 shield bonus. And because I can wield a buckler in one hand, I have a 50 defense. So I was going for a 55. I rolled a 70, which is a critical failure. And you rolled a failure. Is that right?
I rolled a failure, just an 83.
Okay. Now, would you like to, you know, I guess I'll get to a point where I won't remind you. But until you get really accustomed, do you want a fate?
The fate? I think so. Okay. This is one of those moments.
One of those moments. Yeah, we don't want you to die, but
it could happen. It could happen. This could.
And notice you're still at your four fate points. As the game master, I didn't award you a fate roll to replenish any after the encounter with the boar. And so we glossed over the trade.
Sure.
Trip, this sort of thing. So you're still with four, but go ahead. And it's the.
I mean, who knows? Maybe I spent a fate point not barfing on the journey over to the island or whatever.
Right.
So
that's good. Yeah.
That's now canon. All right. I'm going to roll.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, 73.
Oh, and right. Of course, you were going for the base fate 60. Mm-hmm. And since melee was what you were trying to improve, you got a plus 10. From the combat sun sign modifier. So you're going for 70. 73 is a failure.
Yeah.
And so you have to keep your failed melee. And now I rolled a critical failure.
Sorry, on that, do I reduce that to 3?
You don't. I'm sorry. A failed fate roll means that nothing happens, but you don't lose a fate point.
Okay. All right, thanks. Sorry about that.
That could be a house rule, right? You could almost run the game that way, that you're even trying it, you lose a fate point. But the rules as written has a failed fate roll not costing you a fate point. Okay, so I've got I rolled a critical failure. So you did not strike her, but she has a critical failure means it's a mishap.
Okay.
And this is in the melee test. The melee routine.
Page 161, sidebar.
That's correct. Since it ended in a, let's see, where am I? Ended in a 0, it's a fumble check. If I had rolled a critical failure that ended in a 5, because I was blocking, it would have been a stumble. But I have to make a fumble test with my shield, which is essentially just a dex check. For these action ML, you just use the 50. And that's the simplicity of it. In the back of your mind, if I wanted to make her particularly dexterous, maybe she'd have a 60. But I'll just use a 50. So a mishap roll is one of these success tests, you know, with the four results. Against the ML. I was going for a 50. I rolled a 73. So she failed her fumble mishap. But you're right. You pointed out that in the sidebar of page 161 explains the consequences of a mishap roll. And I'll come up there with you. So a fumble, make a dex test. I drop my weapon. I want to point out to people, when you drop your weapon in the middle of engaged combat, it can be kind of dicey to pick it back up. And you can read in there, I'd have to spend a one-term grope action. And if I'm threatened, I actually have to make a test to pick the weapon up. And that sort of depicts the moving mm-hmm. nature of melee. And, you know, you just can't yawn and bend over and pick your shield back up. It might not be possible. So the small victory there is that she dropped her shield.
Yeah. So, I mean, that is, I've disarmed my opponent.
Yes.
I mean, that's mission accomplished for the moment.
Right, right. And because I would narrate this is because you failed in your melee test, it was likely more of a jostle, or maybe she just made an awkward movement on her own that caused the fumble, right? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, you could, it maybe involved the feint that was involved in your attack, and she drops her buckler. Because you do grip a buckler in your fist. It's not necessarily strapped on like a larger shield. So this makes sense that she dropped it. Okay. So now it's my turn. And when there's a rule that, you know, both mine have the same initiative rank. And when that happens with NPCs, the Game Master just chooses if everything else is equal, who goes first. I'm going to have her compatriot, the big fellow with the two-handed club, take an attack. And so this is where he's taking the attack action just like you did. I have a reach 5 with the two-handed club. Now, that doesn't give me a bonus. It just makes it, you know, if you tried to attack him, you'd be at a penalty. So reach doesn't come into play. Let's see if there are any. Now, you are outnumbered.
Yeah.
Notice, even though I dropped my shield, the first thug still has a truncheon, a one-handed club, readied and is threatening you with it. So you do suffer a minus 10 penalty for each opponent beyond the first that you are engaged with and who elect to threaten you. You know, if one of them were looking the other way or decided not to threaten you, that's their option, but they do. So your defenses will be at minus 10.
Okay. Minus 10 or minus 20?
Minus 10.
Okay.
It's I see what you're saying. It's not the number times minus 10. It's minus 10 per opponent, beyond the first opponent that you're engaged
beyond
with.
The first opponent. Got
yeah,
it.
Yeah, beyond the
okay.
first. Okay. Right. Good point, though. So I announce an attack. I'm going to aim for your head, meaning for a 1. And then you announce your defense.
Yeah, so I can block, I can dodge, I can counter-strike.
Right.
Counter-striking is going to leave me open entirely. I'm already at a penalty, so I think I'm going to block.
Okay.
Which feels like perhaps the best option. I'd like to counter strike, but I also don't want to go down in a single hit.
Yeah. Work your way into it. Counter striking is a classic option of Horn Master. BRP has finally gotten around to offering a fight back, but I feel like Horn Master was the first to do it in 1986. There might be some rune quest lorists who would argue with me, but I don't recall. I might be wrong there. I know RuneQuest came out in 1978. I have my first edition bought in-store copy, so I might be wrong there. But I do know people who play Harn Master sort of enjoy the option of counter-striking. And it's
a risky gamble.
Yeah, it's in previous editions, there's a slight risk to it, and I can have a game design discussion of why it's been changed in third edition. It always needed to be a little greater risk for low skill combatants. Mm. High skill combatants might be able to try it more routinely, but let's it is harder in terms of a risk. A block defense is the least risky. The most likely to succeed. A dodge is second most likely to succeed, and a counter strike is third. It has the highest risk of failure.
Yeah. Now, some of these mentioned ties. The blocker wins on a tie. We're talking victory stars there, levels of success, and we're not talking raw numbers, correct?
No, that's exactly good. Great point. It's not the actual dice roll, you know, tying on a 53 is a tie. It's those success levels, those star levels. The advantage of a block is that you automatically win ties. With dodge, you have to break the tie, and there's a way to do that that's quick just by comparing the actual dice roll. And then Counter-Strikes, to successfully to succeed, must they automatically lose ties. So you have to win outright in a Counter-Strike. And I've come up through discussion on Discord some interesting ways to expand that. Have arisen, but essentially, yeah, the Counter-Strike is the most risk.
Okay. Well, we're going to take
your weapon. Oh, go ahead. Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say we're not going to take the risky option on this first round of combat. We're gonna block, but
okay. Yeah. All right.
Sorry, were you going to say something else or?
No, that's it. Let's launch in.
All right. So I'm going to roll my defense, which is also 57. And modified by 10.
Exactly. Being outnumbered.
So it's going to be I got to hit a 47 or less.
Okay. And people at home, I'm going for a 50.
That is a 40.
Oh,
so I made it.
Nice. Okay. I rolled a 26. I succeeded. So you got a critical success. So how many?
Critical success on a 0 or a 5 in the ones place. So.
Right. Now, so how many victory stars does that critical success give you, given the fact that I made a success?
Is it just one? Do they negate? Okay.
Yeah, it just, critical success versus a success is a one-step victory. And so it's one star. If I had failed, it would have been two star. So at least, now here's what's interesting on defense. You blocked that. You have several, the central element, and I guess I should have pointed this out, is by
and we're looking at page, we're looking at page 166, correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay.
Yeah,
for folks so following along at home.
Yeah, that's a good point. Let's look at the little card, as I call them, on this page. A one-star block means the attack fails. Which makes sense. A couple of little rules. You did not gain any tactical advantages, right? I almost struck you just enough so that it required you to make an especially adept parry block with your short sword. You struck it away.
No, he's making me work for it, and I'm not appreciative of that.
And here's the rule that now he when he swung, he was just off balance enough to where he's collided with you, and you have a chance to push him backwards, because and the reason why that is you succeeded on your melee roll, and you were victorious outright without any sort of tiebreaker or anything. You had a one-star victory, and there's a rule called a free press roll on page 172 sidebar that I like to use. It could technically, almost all these rules are sort of optional, you know, until you get adept in the system, you might want to skip over free press rolls. People can read in that paragraph why I'm giving you, Caris, the option to push him back or push him down. Now think about it. You know, you're 6'5". You have it's based upon strength. And so you're going to be quite good at it. It's a press roll is a D6 roll plus your strength of a 16 opposed by my strength. You know, this guy is maybe 5'8", 150 pounds, and you could push him backwards. You know, you could push him down.
I mean, there's no reason not to do it, right?
Exactly. When you're the bigger fella, there is little reason, not to do it. And just, you know, to show people where this press roll table is, I think it's page 106.
106, okay. That's going to – I'll roll it and I'll let you
Yeah, and I'll adjudicate. Sure. So you roll D6 and add your strength score.
Okay.
I'm going to do the same.
Is a 6, and our strength score is a 16, I believe. So, yep, we're looking at a 22. Or
22?
It's the score, not the ML.
That's correct, the score. So you got a 22. I happen to roll a 6, but I only have a strength of 10. So I rolled a 16. You still beat me by 6. And on this press table that our viewers are looking at on page 106, it means I am knocked back 5 feet and I make a stumble mishap roll.
Sweet.
So I'm going to make a quick percentile roll. And I rolled an 11. So I stand on my feet, or I remain standing. And notice that you can describe this how you want. It's not it sounds like a knockback, which it could be. But in this instance, I think it's the result of your critically successful block. You know, you're able to block his club strike, and maybe you shoved him with your other arm or with your body, you know, because, you know, melee. In reality, when you're trying to knock someone out or kill someone, you know, you're jostling constantly. And so it's, you know, these pushes back and forth, this sort of thing. So what's interesting about this is you've knocked him backwards and he's no longer engaged with you for whatever that's worth. Now, remember, you are at they're kind of blocking your way in this alley. So this, you know, this is why I enjoy theater of the mind. On a grid, you know, you would step him back one square, one hex. But there might be some narrative advantage that can also arise when you're playing with miniatures. But I like this idea that you've pushed him back and you might have an avenue to dodge your way out. I'm not quite sure. But at the very least, you're no longer outnumbered.
No longer outnumbered.
Mm-hmm.
I have one person who is disarmed, or they still have a one-handed trenchant?
She still has the small club wielded. She's just dropped her buckler.
Okay, she dropped the buckler.
Yeah, so, and she's getting ready to take a turn. But initially, that press roll brings an end to that turn. Okay, so now it's her turn.
So,
oh yeah, go ahead.
I'm just looking at the melee routine.
Yes.
So, engagement actions, because there's no hits have been exchanged, no morale checks or anything at this point?
Yeah, I think everyone's morale is where it was, and that's another great point, that I have a particular motive for these two of why they're attacking you. I've sort of stated it almost. They're still fairly motivated to take your stuff. So I think they're holding. You know, they haven't been hit yet, but they are thinking twice about this the 6'5". They didn't get a good look at your height when they followed you from the tavern, right? You know, we'll go get this guy. He's wearing armor. He's got that fancy helmet on. They saw a glint of metal, the short sword. So they saw you as perhaps being someone worthy of robbery. But now they're thinking twice about it as you've just shoved this. She's now just seen you shove this guy back and almost fall down. But that's only angered her for the moment. So she's going to take a strike at you with her club. And again, trying to knock you out. So she's trying to hit you in the head. She has a reach of 4. Your short sword, however you want to wield it in a block or, you know, counter strike, is a reach of 4. So it's a wash on her attack. You're no longer outnumbered. You're back up to 57 because of that press roll.
Yeah, I think I'm going to do the smart thing, and I'm going to block once again.
Okay, all right. Yeah.
I mean, I could say, yeah, we want to counter-strike for the example, but
No, it's fair.
I also don't want to go down one hit here before
we
even get to that.
Let's do it.
These dice are not rolling so hot today. Let's see.
All right, so I'm to let people... Okay,
that's a critical fail.
You failed? Well, here's
crit
at home. I'll see if they can figure this out. But I have an action ML of 50, but wielding a club in one hand with my strength lowers that to a 45. You know, so it's slightly unwieldy to do this. But you know, Carrie, I rolled a 45, and you'll have to trust me on that. So I got a critical success, and you got a failure. Is that right?
I got an 85, so it's a crit failure.
Oh, okay, this is where your character goes down. Now, here's so I have a three-star victory. Is that correct? Critical
it
success,
sounds like
one,
it.
Two, three. Okay, now, do you want to mitigate that as best as you can? With
I think we need to.
Okay.
It's either I'm probably getting skewered or clubbed in the dome.
Right.
So my fate is a 60. Whoops, that one went off the grid. Oh, I rolled a zero, double zero. So
okay.
And a four. So it's a four on the fate roll. So yes, I make it.
And you were the fated test was still melee. So we're going for the now well-known 70. Is that right? You're 60 plus 10. Combat sunshine modifier to point that out for people. You were going for a 70 and you succeeded. Yeah. So
yes. Right. No. So wait. I'm thinking myself in circles here. So I roll the fate roll to do what?
You rolled a critical
change.
Failure on your melee. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just trying to bring it back down by one star, right? That's the effect of the fate roll?
If you roll a critical success, you have the option of bringing it two levels. So the broad strategy is just you're trying to mitigate her victory stars. And you're also, you know, the other, to really dig into this, notice that you rolled a critical failure, which will leave you facing a mishap.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't do anything about that critical failure, you rolled a five. The initial roll ended in a five, I believe, right?
Yeah, it was an 85.
85. That means a stumble test.
Yeah.
So that's another motive to at least improve this to a failure.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so, you just succeeded in doing that.
Yep. So it's no longer a horrific scenario.
Critical failure.
Yeah. So it's two stars that she gets.
I have a two-star victory, so you're getting right at, you know, something's going down here in a minute. But you also lose your four fate points go to three.
Yep. Already accounted for.
You did that. So. Ah, didn't see you. Okay. So I have a two-star victory, and I'm going to – and so what that means is the first star is a strike. And we can go – let's go look at that that melee table that you had rightly pointed out back on page 166. For her, I'm looking in the upper left card. Notice that a one-star victory is base impact. So we're getting ready to go to the injury sequence. Now, each additional star is a tactical advantage. Each extra star can be a bonus action, extra impact, better precision, or a setup. You know, it's hard not to choose extra impact. So that's what I'm going to choose. Okay. For bludgeoning weapons and for clubs, we could look at the specifics. I've got it written down. It'll be a plus three impact. I have a D6 plus one, so it's going to be a D6 plus four impact. So we're going to the injury sequence.
Yep.
And people can follow along. We're getting ready to go through step one and two. Step one is a location. So I'm going to roll a D6 and a D10 at once. So I rolled a two and a two. I hit you in an arm, and we can look at you, now. We can really look at Karis's character sheet, right? I rolled a two, which is in the arm zone, and another two is in the shoulder.
Yep.
And we can dig into how to determine whether it's a right or a left arm. Since everything else is equal, that two can mean right shoulder. Which it does by default, in, at least in my campaigns. And it matters with you because that's where your weapon is. But I hit you in the right shoulder, and then I roll impact, which is step two. I rolled a five on the die. I get a plus one and then a plus three from the tactical advantage. So I have a strike impact of a nine to your right shoulder. So see if you can, and it was a bludgeoning aspect.
Bludgeoning, so I get four on the bludgeoning armor. So it's a five.
That makes it a five. And we'll keep borrowing your sheet. Look, it because of the tactical advantage, right? That plus three extra damage edged it just into a serious. So Yeah, you're actually welcome to the Boers world, right? You're actually typing in an injury.
Yep. So I got an S2 on my right shoulder.
Mm-hmm. And you're going to go ahead and enter in the B, the aspect, B for boy, S2B.
Yep.
Okay. Boy. So now we're going to do the shock. There's no chance of bleeding, obviously. It could be. If you got a G5 from a club, it means there's bleeding, but not on this S2. We're going to go to step four on page 169, the shock routine. And since it's my, I'm going to, well, actually, you're the victim here. You're the target. Notice the shoulder is a shock mm-hmm. three location.
Yep. So we've got a shock of three. I'm going to mm-hmm. roll my shock. Sorry, we add something to the three, right?
Yeah, the two of the S2. So three. Okay. Right. And you can either find right that. Yeah, there. You've written down yeah. the two. So there's your five. So right five, before you make the shock. Mm-hmm.
So we're already under a state of shock, so or stun. So we're doing okay for the moment.
For the moment. But let's see if you can make a decent shock roll.
Yeah, because if I crit fail this one, that's bad news.
You're right. It's true.
All right, my shock is a 70, so let's see. Oh, my God. These dice. That's an 84.
Okay, so it's merely a failure. So you end up with a final shock of six,
mm-hmm.
Which is no particular shock state. So not quite. Now, you felt that, to be sure, right? Just a minor hairline fracture. And the other thing, you know, people might be asking, all right, doesn't Walt get, or doesn't this brigand, this thug, get the option of a press roll? And I do. But given the fact that I'm 5'6", 140 pounds, kind of to role play my strength, I mean, to sort of to game it, I have a strength 10, and I know Karis has a strength 16, and there's not much likelihood of you know, me just idly shoving you back. There's no downside to failing a press roll, but just to speed the game up, I would not. Or not just to speed the game up, but that's one option of, you know, there was some play test involved about, you know, risking the press roll, which you could insert as a house rule. But anyway, I'll not accept the press roll. So the last step is you have a 10, you know, we touched on this in the last video with the boar, but now we have an actual example of it. On page 170, we have a couple of little details to look at, the injury effect. You, in fact, take 10 impairment to your right arm. Yep.
There we go.
And then lastly, the injury mishap.
Yes.
Below this section, yeah. You need to make a fumble roll. The blow itself might have dislodged the short sword. And that's mm-hmm. just a Dex ML test.
All right. So I have a 65.
Mm-hmm.
That's unmodified, correct?
That's right. Unmodified by the 10, at least right. at this point. Oh, I can't see it.
It's a 69.
Oh, that's fine. Well, you could fate this.
I think
right?
it's time to put these dice aside and pick up another right? set.
I think, well, that's probably true. You can drop the weapon. You can make fate rolls on attribute tests. It's just an unmodified straight fate roll of 60.
Yeah, I say we do it. We've got
Burning.
Three.
Well, yeah.
All right. Do we switch it up though? That's the real question. Mm-hmm. I pick these dice because they turn up pretty well on camera. So, all right, we'll switch it up for these and see how that works.
Okay.
And those are my Call of Cthulhu dice. Those usually roll pretty well.
Yeah.
All right, 55.
Okay.
So
you don't drop your weapon. You know what? I'll be true to my word in that I do require morale checks of player mm-hmm. characters, which is anathema to many of viewers, and you don't have to do this. But to my mind, initiative is a skill just like any other. And So Carrie will still has agency. I know a lot of people feel like morale checks for PCs or some sort of disruption of that, and I guess they are. But it's but the character Carice is the one that is being frightened, not Carrie the player, although he may be. So
I'm terrified.
Yeah, I can tell. So morale, if we went up to page 162.
Two?
Yeah. Step five. And this is a good play test. You know, you've made a fate roll on an attribute, which we hadn't done before. So the morale triggers impairment. Look, the basic rule is suffering a serious or a grievous injury triggers a morale roll, which mm-hmm. is an initiative check. So you're making an initiative 65 roll.
Yeah, my initiative is 65. So, yeah. Yep.
And you'll role play this like any other outcome in the game. You know, it might not be what you want to do, but, you know, you didn't want to critically fail the block either, but you were still required to make a melee test. So let's see what happens. And
right.
Hope you don't go catatonic, but, you know.
Jeez. Oh, 67. It's not my day.
Well, you know, and the, people. Do you make a fate roll or do you, what the result is that you withdraw. The character selects the move action each turn to retreat from combat, at least at a half move, or you pass if movement is not possible. But then it's going to take you a minute to overcome this. You can start to roll out of it a minute later, but basically it means, you know, your character wants to get out of there.
Yeah. So either
wants to try to run away.
Either I make a move or I try to RP it and see if they'll stand down, right? And say like, okay, look, here's the pouch. Like just.
Yeah, you could do that also. You could just say, okay, here's. Yeah, you could role play. You're exactly right. But your morale has you've wavered. It was that blow to the shoulder. You know, you're.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. The last bit is if you can fate this initiative roll too. Or you can just let it ride, and it's a.
I think we've seen that fate is not on my side today.
Okay,
with these roles, right. So I think it's an acknowledgement that they got their mark, and just see if they'll let me go with just the pouch.
Okay,
right.
They want the you hand them the pouch, and of course there's not much in it. Is that right?
Probably not.
And the fellow with the large club steps back up. He, you know, so they're both engaging you, and they go, "We'll hand the sword over also."
So I know I can't fight them in this moment because I failed that morale.
Right.
So my option is either to give them the sword or to attempt to run, but now they're blocking the alley, right? A moment ago, they weren't. And I might have been able to move past. Well, no, because I think I would have hit the engage zone on that second guy, and I would have had to stop. Right?
That's right. He would have, and by you know,
assuming it's a two-person wide alley.
You're right.
So I think
so. To get past them now is technically a press attack. But what's happening is you're having to pass if movement is technically not possible, or at least free movement in this sense. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a standoff.
So as far as morale goes, though, because mm-hmm. I failed that, I really don't have an option to attack, correct?
That's right.
Yeah.
For the next minute, you know, as this sort of unfolds, it's sort of a standoff.
So I think I'm getting robbed. I think.
Yeah, it kind of sounds like it. So they menacingly, you know, step towards you. It seems like you're hesitating in handing over the sword. So you have a choice to hand it over, to hang on to it, because there's nothing about withdrawing the morale test that says you have to relinquish. Mm-hmm. But it just means for the moment.
There's nowhere for me to withdraw to.
Right.
Is the other thing. So
yeah,
I think I would just throw the sword down on the ground.
Okay. All right. Well, she keeps your, She picks up her buckler with her eye on you. And as she's picking up the buckler, she takes the sword and they back out of the alley.
Okay. Well, that's the way it went down.
Yeah, that's the way it went down.
They got an upgrade.
Yeah, they did. They did. You know, so a minute later, you know, as they've turned the corner, you're still a little shaken by this. Your right shoulder still hurts. Make an initiative test.
Sure.
This is a what's called a reaction roll.
Seven.
Okay. So that sort of standoff took 10 or 15 seconds, you know, two or three rounds as you. So about a half minute or three quarters of a minute later, you've shaken it off and you're now steady. You've steadied yourself. You know, you could chase after them or, you know, look, you could, they went right at the end of the alley. So you could try to track them down. And, you know, that would be where we'd pick the game up. But essentially that's the end of that. You were vanquished.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean that's it. So the next thing would be like if we wanted to get into healing or something like that, which we can save for.
Yeah. Oh, right. Yeah, that would be because this would be a nice, you know, it's the an S2 bludgeoning wound to the shoulder is not life threatening, right? You're not bleeding,
right?
And you're technically not in shock, you know, which is other if you had because I think you ended up on a 5 or a 6, so you weren't even stunned. You know, obviously, when you become incapacitated or unconscious, there's a risk of lapsing into extended shock. So, yeah, you're perfectly healthy. And so you can start plotting your revenge.
Plotting my revenge or figuring out how to grovel to my lord that sent me here because I'm competent about how I lost my sword and
well, you know what I'm
whatever
gonna say
is in my
is,
pouch.
Well, it just so happens that in the narrative of the campaign, you would have been paid fairly handsomely in the during the trip down. And so let's say you would just have, you see, technically this is the pre-game as it's known in Harn Master, Harn World. Mm-hmm. So let's say you just happen to have enough coin stowed back at the inn to purchase a new short sword.
Sure.
So that technically at the start of On the Silver Way, you will have been the character that's on your sheet. Now, if this were an ongoing campaign, you know, you'd be well, you probably would have been paid. So you would have some cash, some coin to replenish your short sword.
Yeah.
Good.
Well, that's the thing is like you get that story out of it where most other games you're just fighting to the death.
Yeah.
And that's the way it goes down.
Right. Now, and you know, this is, we pointed this out. I think I lapsed into sort of a discussion of how long combat takes, right? There was a little bit of explication that I was doing as I took you, you know, and for the viewers, we went around to various pages. But, you know, in the first couple of sessions, that's likely going to happen with other people. So it is true that, you know, one-on-one, one-on-two, two-on-four is very much a sweet spot for Harn Master. And 4-on-8, you're into longer time. But notice it was just a couple of rounds, and several interesting things happened. You know, the fumbled buckler, you know, you had pushed them back. You had them, well, in his case, on his heels. And then
it was looking good
the
for
luck
a second.
Of the critical, right? The classic critical strike versus critical failure is what drops player characters, right? You know, that you mitigated it somewhat with fate. And, you know, fate roll, this is a new mechanic in Harn Master. And so it was called upon several times with the boar. You attempted it a couple of times here. You may have attempted it. I think it was nice to let it play out. You may have attempted it against the morale roll, right? You probably could have faded that to a success and we could have continued on.
Let's see if fate was actually on our side.
Let's see if you're going for the 7.
An 18. An 18.
18. So yeah, you would have might've faded that withdrawal back into a steady and maybe have been able to extricate yourself from the
I think it's also important to note, you know, in a scenario where you're playing with other players, there's a rally mechanic where someone with a command can try to rally withdrawing players and stuff like that. It's not just like, oh, I'm out of the battle.
Oh, yeah. So, right. No, that's a good point. On that same page of 162, underneath the morale roll table is the rally roll. And it's modeled to where you just can't. The rally roll could have brought him back into steady mode.
Mm-hmm.
Now you can't keep repeating the rally roll every round. It's modeled or built so that you want your best commander to do these rally rolls at a given moment. Because if you fail it, you won't get to attempt the rally roll for a minute. And then, you know, as we've realized in both these little combats, you know, 12 rounds of combat is quite long. So, you know, the boar battle was over in 1.5. You know, this took two, maybe into the second. So things happened quickly.
Well, this was
yeah,
fun.
I guess, yeah, I thought it went.
We got a good story out of it.
Yes, right. You had such a heroic result with the boar and then the less than heroic in the big city, but that's what happens to.
Hey, no good deed goes unpunished.
Country mice, when they go to the big city, they get robbed. Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
It's classic. You know, he gave it a go and then was just like, nope, not worth it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because he knows he's got this important meeting with this fellow fellow named Elbin, who is a renowned scholar, which seems strange, but he's known for going on some interesting adventures, and you might be able to earn back your losses. But luckily, you had just been paid out by the caravan. And so, and I tell you, as to prepare you fully for that session, this would be a moment when I would probably reset your fate to 5 points. But if this were an ongoing campaign, actually scroll up to your character sheet and I'll tell you how it works. I think the adventures with the boar and in this alley robbery, I would probably give you a fate roll, like at the end of the session. You know, we've played probably 2 or 3 hours, and it's kind of the end of a narrative arc, right? We're getting ready to do On the Silver Way. So the way the common fate recovery is that you get a D10 roll. And since your fate points are 4 or less, you get to make this roll. If they were still at 5, you wouldn't be making this roll. But since it's less than 5, you're going to try to get a D10 roll that exceeds 2.
Okay.
Because you have 2 fate points.
5.
A 5. So by exceeding your current fate total, you get a +1. So it'd go up to a 3. If this were an ongoing game. But like I said, at the start of On the Silver Way, I would award you the full fate at 5. And then likely, yeah, a short sword would have appeared back in your kit since this was a pregame scenario. And it would have happened weeks or maybe even several weeks before the start of the actual campaign. All right.
Well, this was awesome.
Well, nice.
This was great. Thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule and sitting down once again. I will include this character sheet in the video description. Oops, I didn't mean to close that. And
you know, you might
folks can grab it if they want
to. On there to remind the S2 injury, we might do a quick video on healing, or people can take carries through the healing. The healing routine themselves, maybe, to see exactly how serious that S2B is. The last thing you hear about Elbin is that he's a skilled physician, so that might be the first thing. He has to patch you up before he hires you. Who knows?
Well, there we go. I saved it.
Yeah.
We'll keep that on there.
Yeah.
I also notice under injury, we have an HB13. What is that?
That's called healing base. And it was part of the calculating character sheet. It appeared there for you. It's an average of endurance and will, rounded up if endurance is higher. And that the 13 is on the attribute scale, you know, kind of the 3 through 18 scale. When mm-hmm. when likely Elbin sits down to take a look at your shoulder injury and any treatment that he can give to it, you'll end up being assigned based upon his physician role a multiplier between 1 and 6. And this multiplier is not unlike the multipliers that appeared in character gen skill multiple mm-hmm. because it functions similarly. So depending on how well he succeeds or fails, but how well his physician role turns out, you'll be awarded maybe a x3 or x4. That's called the healing rate. And if you were awarded a healing rate 5, you would type that in right after the S2B.
Okay.
You would write HR5. And then the HR5, every few days, people can randomize it. The base rate is every 5 days you get a healing roll. So you would multiply that HR multiple, the 5, times your 13. And so it would end up being a test, just like okay. all these other rolls with 4 possible success levels. So you would, that shoulder would be healing at, you know, a 65 if the healing rate was a 5. But if you don't have a physician, you know, and you just leave it to heal on its own, that's very, very likely a healing rate 2, right? So it'll just heal on its own. Some injuries just can't be left unattended or you'll die. So I've lapsed into our injury video.
No. I think that, we might as well just go for it. I think if you have an extra minute, let's do that.
It doesn't take very long, and it's kind of a natural resolution to this little misadventure in the alley. And I'm going to role play it. Let's say you go back to your inn. You luckily find that your little hidden extra pouch of money that was paid out has not been taken. So you'll be able to pick up that short sword tomorrow on the next day. But the healing routine starts in the injury section on page 178. And this is a good idea. Let's say the innkeeper who has taken a liking to you, mm-hmm. you know, we're going to give him a 50 physician.
Sure.
And so the first step, you have to check for bleeding. So there was no bleeding. You see these various treatment table on the right. You're going to be referring back to that. Let's just scroll through this, and the viewers can see that on the next page, the next most lethal trauma that you have, this is still under the kind of the title first aid, right? Stopping bleeding, tending to extended shock. And this is when people, because they can be conscious, but they've lapsed into the cold sweats. They have kind of a sickly pallor. They're essentially unaware of their surroundings. And this can be deadly. You can lapse into extended shock and die 4, 8, 12 hours later. You don't have that. No, step number 3 is the coma stage. And this is kind of a nice thing to point out because Harnmaster, despite always having a vivid and detailed healing routine, has never really modeled long-term comas. Now, it is true that, you know, in the medieval age, if you lapsed into a long-term coma, you would likely not come out of it. But even shorter long-term comas, you know, you fall unconscious for 2 or 3 days, but you come out of it. So now you're able to model that. You're conscious, so you're fine. So we would just scroll on down to 180, and this innkeeper looks at your injury. You know, you have to take your quilt coat off. He sees it's more than just heavy bruising. He fears that maybe your collarbone is slightly fractured. He advises you to set this in a sling and really not move it very often. So what's happened is, we've looked at the treatment role tables in the upper right-hand corner of 180. We've located the blunt aspect. Yeah, let's take us back to your injury, page 2 on your character sheet.
Yep.
We see that you have an S2B aspect, and the severity is that it's serious. So we go over, of those 6 tables, we're looking at the upper left one, the blunt
yep.
aspect. The middle column, whether it's an S2 or an S3, we're looking just at the middle column. And you can see the 4 classic success levels. Those are the success levels of the physician who's treating
okay.
you. So this innkeeper has an ML50. Notice at the bottom, the TRT row, that tells you that the treatment that is required is a set, SET, you know, he's setting your, you can look back on page 178 and you can see in that treatment table that the SET stands for set and splint, a simple fracture, stabilized. With a stick or, you know, rolled up clothing. In your case, with this collarbone, I mean, I'll let the physicians out there tell me what it would actually be. I guess I was almost describing a broken arm, but certainly you'd have to be immobilized in some way. And it takes about 15 minutes. You get a time factor. Maybe if you're out on expedition with more Gargoon on the way, right? More orcs over the hill. This time factor would be meaningful. But, you know, 15, 20 minutes later, he gets to make a test. I do get, going back now to page 180, in that same serious yellow column, at the mm-hmm. very bottom, there's a modifier. And you can see that blunt injuries are a little bit more easily treated, right, than maybe point projectile. You know, embedded projectile injuries have a minus 20. You can see that. So they're more difficult. So this is where his healing 50 gets a plus 10. So I'm going for a 60. And so that I'm not blamed for it, I'm going to make you make, you'll get to roll the physician's test.
Oh, which poor set of dice. We'll go back to the OGs.
Right.
This is like going back to that slot machine that hasn't hit yet. Right.
Yeah, you're bound to.
It's gonna win one of these days.
Fallacy. Right.
All right. 70.
70. Nice. So you're right. It was the gambler's fallacy because you're still rolling critical failures. So let's look at that. Well, you're lucky. This is pre-story, right? Because I'll hand wave it.
If this doesn't sound like me at the table for real, I don't know what does.
Right. Okay, let's look at the table. This is an interesting playtest and enjoyable for viewers, I'm sure.
So that's a crit fail.
Critical failure. Now, here's a nice house rule that I have not mentioned in even the advice and options. Notice that it would be the innkeeper who would have to expend fate points. Mm-hmm. So there could be a house rule where you allow the patient, the PC patient, to somehow expend fate points for him to retest. I don't know. But as written, you know, this would have to be a player character healer who, and then you'd have to convince that player to burn fate points. But as written, there is no improvement to this critical failure. So what you're going to write down, notice I was discussing this healing rate number. Well, with a serious injury, this is an HR3. So you mm-hmm. would type in next to your S2B on your character sheet in that shoulder, that right shoulder. You know, you'll space a couple of times and then, yeah, HR3. And then the black box is an ominous sign.
Yes, it is.
and God, boy, this has been some classic Harn Master results. Everything from the one-shot boar kill to where we stand now. It says impairment. The injury's location might suffer permanent impairment. And this will all depend on how long it takes to heal.
My pitching career is going to be over.
Yeah, your pitching career might take a hit. Here's another nice thing at the bottom of page 180 are some narrative injury descriptions. Notice that the blunt in the first column, the serious, I described it as a hairline or simple fracture. Mm-hmm. Now, what happens is, so you're ready to start healing. We would go to step six, which is when you make healing rolls. Now, if you're in downtime, right? If you're between adventures, which you are, every 5 days you would make a test. And people over the years have randomized that 5 day period when you're in the field, like if you know of a Gargoon, if you're getting ready to ambush some folks, you want to avoid player characters metagaming that 5 day period. Well, we'll do it on day six because we know we'll get a heal. So you would probably want to randomize that 5 day period. There's a suggestion to randomize it between 4 and 6 days. Because some metagaming is actually realistic. You're going to get a you rest up for a few days, this sort of thing. But
Yeah, make
otherwise,
sure you
in
can move
down,
that arm.
But since this is downtime, it'd be every 5 days. So let's say 5 days go by. What you would do is the test. Now we're back into Carrie the player making a test of his player character. So these could be faded
Sure.
if you really want to avoid the downside to some of these roles. So we would take the HR3 and we would multiply that by your HB, your healing base 13. So
So we
it's a
got a
fairly
36.
low. The innkeeper didn't really know what he was doing.
He's an
So you're going
innkeeper.
for 30, 39s on these rolls.
39, not 36, yeah.
Yeah, but still, yeah, quite low.
Okay, so let's see. There we go. It's a two.
Oh, nice. Okay, well, let's look at that table. Step six, page 181 on the left. Notice the healing base times healing rate is in the head row. So a success, healing. Reduce the injury level by one. When reduced to zero or less, the injury is fully healed. So 5 days later, you'll erase the S2. You're going to keep the HR3. So the S2 becomes an M1. You're marching back down to the left.
Perfect.
And yeah, you did it exactly right. Now, here's what's interesting. You get to reduce the 10 impairment that's in the right shoulder square right below it. That becomes a five.
Okay.
And I want to point something out to kind of veteran Harn players, but new players need to know this. If you had attained a healing rate of six or more, notice that, yeah, let's go back and look at your page 180. When the innkeeper made the physician role, that top left table, the middle column, if instead of rolling a critical failure, if they had rolled a critical success, not only would the healing rate three have gone to healing rate six, but what's interesting is at this point, because it was so well treated, there's a rule that eliminates the five of the minor injury. So when if you can attain an HR6, you don't suffer the five impairment of the minor injury. You keep rolling for healing just to clean the slate. There could be infection implications, but I was just pointing that out. But that was not the case for you. He in fact rolled a critical failure.
Oh, actually, on
Luckily.
the, did we forget the possibility of permanent impairment? Did we actually
No,
need to roll that?
what happens is you would keep track of how many, and I should have pointed that out. You're right. The way that rule works is the player keeps track of how many days it takes for that injury to heal to a minor injury. And in your case, it only took 5 days. So let's look that up. I want to show you where that table is. It's in step 8 on page 182.
Yep.
You'll see permanent impairment. An injured location whose treatment includes a black box might induce permanent impairment. You'd have to reach 20 days of floundering in your healing for permanent impairment to kick in, which could have happened. But notice in that first entry, less than 20 days to get to a minor injury, there's no impairment. Okay. Permanent impairment, which is nice. So then 5 more days would go by, and you would make another 39 roll.
Perfect.
And, you know, you can make that roll just to see how long it takes to heal. You're safe from permanent impairment once it reaches minor injury.
35.
Oh, so critical success. What's nice to point out back on page 181 for new gamers is that in that upper left table, notice that a critical success the healing level is reduced by 2.
Yeah, so we're in the clear.
Yeah, you of course didn't need it, but yeah, you would erase all of that. You'd erase entirely M1B, HR3, the 5 impairment would disappear. And so after a couple of hard weeks, you're good to go. And really, after that first 5 days, you probably could have functioned. And the
only permanent
bruise
is to my ego.
right. Yeah, you've learned some lessons there. Is you might ask, well, why do we keep the M1 injury you wanted to keep because of the 5 impairment, but there's also this compounding injury role that if you would have engaged in combat with an injury and you get struck in the same location, there's a chance of it exacerbating. But yeah, you got through that. There's a couple of unfortunate roles, the morale.
Couple.
You know, this this quack innkeeper, or he had a bad day. He usually knows what he's doing.
No, that was fun. We covered a lot of ground today. I think anything else we'll have to do another session.
We've already done an addendum to the melee, but it was appropriate, the healing of melee. I mean, it was kind of nice that you took an injury, frankly.
Yeah. Yeah, we got to run through that, and that was quick. I mean, not the end of the world. At least not the end of Karis's world.
Oh, yeah, he's ready to head up the Silver Way, I think. Yeah.
I think so.
I appreciate the time.
Thanks for joining me. We'll chat about some other things, and I'm gonna go ahead and I'll end things here. Thanks.